contribution of support. And we thank you.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
My name's Rebecca Nieto. I am the program director at the University YMCA and filling in today for Steve Shoemaker, our executive director. Our guests today are students who are involved with Students Improving the Lives of Animal, an organization on campus dedicated to animal welfare. We have John Fisher, Kathleen King, and Uli Nishan. They're all with us today, and just a reminder that we welcome you at any point to call in and make comments in regard to the information we'll be talking about. Just to get started, I'd like to maybe if one of you can talk about the history of Students Improving the Lives of Animal, I guess here and after referred to as SILA, and when it started and how it started on campus.
There was basically a student on campus, Danielle Marino, who sort of was looking for something to get involved with and wanted to work with animal welfare, animal rights, and was realizing that there really wasn't any group on campus dealing with those issues. There was the Campus Vegetarian Society, which dealt with that in the context of vegetarianism, but so she sort of wanted to do something that was more focused just on the animals. So she started up the group, and it just sort of grew pretty quickly to where it is today.
So when was that? How many years ago?
Fall 2001 was when the group was formed.
Fall 2001. And was it a slow membership start in terms of how many people, how did people catch on? How did you kind of spread the word that this was a new student organization?
I think it was pretty quick. I mean, a lot of people who had sort of never come out to be involved in any sort of group so suddenly were interested in that kind of thing. And so right away we had a good, you know, dozen members or so that were coming out. And since then it's, you know, gone up and down, but we've got a pretty good crowd.
Now, you're a student organization of the campus as well as a student program of the University YMCA. When did that happen? Immediately, did you become a student program of the Y?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so that took place right away. What do you see as SILA's primary purpose?
I would say one of our main purposes is education to the campus community. And also, we bring in a lot of speakers to do that. We do tabling about different issues regarding animal welfare, and we also do different activist things regarding issues specifically on campus, like different animal experiments that are going on or things mm-hmm. of that nature.
In terms of tabling, kind of explain what that entails.
Usually a few times a semester we'll go out on the quad in campus, and we'll hand out literature. Sometimes it's about vegetarianism and health, and sometimes we'll work with Campus Vegetarian Society. Like just last week, we had a table and we handed out free vegetarian food to students going by the campus so they could kind of get a taste for vegetarianism, what's it about, what vegetarians eat, and why are some of the reasons that people choose to be vegetarians.
Are most of the individuals in your group vegetarians?
We have a pretty diverse group. But I think most are probably vegetarian, but we have people at all different levels.
Mm-hmm. Now, Uli, I know that you organized some of the speakers this semester that came in. Do you want to talk about some of those speakers and what they covered and kind of what they talked about?
We had Miyun Park come from Washington, D.C. She's the president of Compassion Over Killing. And she spoke about the issues of animal activism and, for the most part, trying to give us examples of, like, how to keep up the spirit and then also information about animal activism.
And I know last 2 weeks ago you had two other speakers come in. What did they cover?
We had Ken Vizzetti, who came in and spoke about soy and the effects of soy, and also Linda Evans. Came and spoke about basically like nutrition and she had pretty much an open forum where we discussed like issues behind vegetarian nutrition.
I know that there is also Campus Vegetarian Society, another student group on campus. How do you all distinguish yourselves from them and in terms of what your purpose is in animal welfare?
Well, Campus Vegetarian Society, their members are vegetarian for all different reasons. Some are just for health reasons, some are for animal reasons, some are for the environment, some are for all of them. but in Students Improving the Lives of Animals. We do deal with vegetarian issues, but it's not limited to that. And when we do deal with vegetarian issues, it's primarily about animal welfare. I mean, we cover aspects of health and the environment, but also a big part of it is the treatment of animals on factory farms.
Do you have any kind of a parent organization? I know, for example, groups like, let's see, Amnesty International, they have a national organization that handle some of the issues that they address. Do you all have a parent organization, or is there a national organization that you see yourselves kind of modeled after, or that you whose issues you do pick up?
We don't really have any national organization. I mean, kind of by default, a lot of people assume that we're a PETA organization just because they think animal rights and think PETA, which is something we kind of shy away from just because while we agree they do a lot of good work, we also – most people in the group tend to be opposed to some of PETA's positions on using women in demeaning roles to further their cause. So so really there aren't any national groups that are doing quite exactly what we want to do. So we're sort of doing our own thing.
How do you all decide what issues to address and what you're going to cover and what types of – animal welfare issues that you'll be working on?
For the most part, we decide that at our meetings, and it's a pretty open forum. Anyone can bring in an idea, and then we discuss it and decide whether or not the group wants to go forward with that action.
When are your meetings?
Our meetings are on Thursday night at 6 p.m.
At the
University of YMCA in the Student Programs Office.
Now, is the group limited to just students, or do you encourage other people to get involved?
For the most part, we recruit on campus, but we would not be opposed to outside community members coming to our meetings and helping out.
What could people expect to see if they come to a meeting? What types of things do you talk about and do at your meetings?
Well, we usually probably have about 10 to 15 people if it's a solid turnout, and we usually go over what we've done in the past week and talk about more planning for upcoming events and what needs to be done and kind of assign tasks, and then also just talk about, you know, whatever comes up, really.
What is the biggest issue that you've dealt with as an organization?
I'd say that would probably be the we had a dissection campaign recently, the goal of which was to allow students in classes that would ordinarily use dissection or vivisection to use non-animal alternatives to that. And that was probably their biggest campaign just because it was something that was really a matter of changing university policy, and there was a lot of opposition to it from some of the faculty. And so that was something that probably required the most planning and effort on our part. And it was also one of the more long-term things we did. I mean, that's gone over the course of a year, and it continues today to try to refine some of the issues that are still coming up.
What are some of the alternatives that you suggest students do instead of doing the actual dissection?
There's a variety of things. There's some computer models, which are really nice. There's videos. To a lesser degree, there's things like just photos and diagrams. But the great thing about some of the alternatives are that if you've ever dissected, you know, you sort of open it up, and if you cut it wrong, all of a sudden, well, you've lost your specimen. You no longer can distinguish things. Or if you have a typical specimen, you're out of luck. Whereas with a computer model, you know, it's a typical animal. You're looking at what you ought to be learning.
Mm-hmm.
If you make a mistake, you can do it again. Or if you didn't understand the material, you can do it again. And they've gotten, you know, technologically advanced enough that they have some in 3D.
Oh, wow.
They have some, you know, where you actually cut using the mouse as a scalpel, and if you cut it incorrectly, it'll show you what would have happened. And there's really, in most of the studies that we found, they've found that either these alternatives are as effective as dissection, or they're more effective. And a lot of it, the reasons they're more effective are, like I said, just you can redo it, and they work better.
Now, does this cost students any more to use this alternative than what is planned in most of the classes?
No, I mean, this is something that, because of the policy, in any class that's a gen ed, for example, a student has the right to request an alternative, and it doesn't cost them any money. As far as what it actually costs the university, for a single purchase for one time, it's probably true that, you know, a CD-ROM will cost more than one animal.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind that, you know, they have to buy these animals year after year,
exactly.
One for each student. And so they pay for themselves pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Are you finding that a lot of students are using this and that they're choosing this method?
It's still sort of something that we're having trouble with getting the word out. Originally, the policy stated that this is something that all the professors are required to discuss, you know, right at the beginning of class. But we're finding that to a large degree that hasn't happened. Some students have taken the option. Other students have expressed they still felt intimidated, or were told that, you know, well, you can do it, but it's you're not going to get a good grade.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still some things we're trying to work out the details on.
I'd like to invite callers to ask questions or make comments about the students improving the lives of animals and the things we're discussing today. If you are outside of Champaign-Urbana, you can call 1-800-222-WILL. That's 1-800-222-9455. Within Champaign-Urbana, you can call 333-WILL or 333-9455. And also a reminder that the future of this station is in your hands. Only the contributions from our members or friends of WILL have made it possible for WILL to maintain the quality and variety of the program service, as tax-based funding has declined drastically. Now WILL must raise almost half of their operating budget every year. And if you have made a financial contribution in the past, we want to remind you that your support is still needed. To call in and make a contribution, you can call 217-244-9455. Getting back to our topic today, the Students Improving the Lives of Animal Group and some of the things that you cover. I know that there was some action in years past when circus animals have come into town, and Barnum and Bailey and other circuses that have been in town. What type of research has your organization done, and what type of knowledge is out there about circus animals and why animal welfare groups are so concerned about the animals in circuses?
Well, basically, we've just kind of researched it by seeing what kind of mistreatments have been recorded and investigated for the different circuses that come into the area. And I think it's a concern for us because a lot of young children, that's kind of an experience for them with animals. And, you know, if you love animals, you want to go to the circus and you want to see the elephants and you want to see the tigers. And a lot of parents and a lot of children don't realize the cruelty that goes on behind the closed doors and what really happens to the animals. So it's kind of just about education.
Do you encourage individuals not to attend the circuses, or what do you consider a humane form of seeing animals and being with animals?
I would say that the most humane form that I've personally seen animals would be like on a farm sanctuary, where animals are put in an environment that they are able to have their own, I guess, will to some extent. And the circus really isn't a place where an animal can have its freedom in that way. And the way they're trained and the way they're kept is not really conducive to, I guess, the happiness of the animal. So we strongly discourage attendance to the circus because money is what talks in the end. So.
Mm-hmm.
And at the last circus that came through town, it wasn't just an issue of, in general, you know, these animals are caged. It was an actual circus that had numerous violations of the USDA of animal cruelty. And we had, you know, I don't have the statistics in front of me right today,
sure.
But at the time we had signs holding up saying, look, here's how many times they've been, you know, violated. Here's some of the things that they did. And parents would drive up with their kids and say, I'm not going to pay money to watch, you know, some guy who beats an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was something that they didn't want to be a part of. And so a lot of people did turn around. It wasn't that we were trying to harass people or say, you know, here's what you should do. It's just sort of like, here, you know, this is not what they're portraying themselves as.
Exactly. Just getting the truth out there. Okay. We have a call. Just one second. Yes?
Hi.
Hi there.
I have a question for the SILA group.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if they would consider themselves more as, like, animal welfareists or maybe animal rights activists. Like, what are their stand on ever using animals for, you know, any purpose of, you know, using it as food or, you know, using it in experiments. And I was just wondering, where do they stand on that?
Thank you.
I would say for the most part, I think the final goal would be animal rights, but at this point it's a little hard to advocate the strict form which animal rights is. So any little step we can make in the progress towards, you know, the animal rights movement helps out. So animal welfare leading to animal rights, I'd say.
Now, how is that for a lot of people? I still struggle with that. Is what's the distinction in terms of more specifically? What is an ideal animal rights situation? And I know you're certainly animal welfare, but activist. But what's an ideal animal rights situation?
Well, I think in the purest form, animal rights says that basically animals have their own rights, you know, to life, liberty, and happiness, just like humans do. So as I say, in the absolute most extreme form, it would be animals are not ours to use in any way, really, that we see fit. Whereas animal welfare is more, given that we're going to be using animals for our own needs, how can we make it as humane as possible? So, for example, an animal welfareist might be willing to eat meat, but might want to buy meat from someone who grows their beef or their chickens, raise them in a more humane fashion. They might not be against medical experimentation, but they might say, well, if we're going to do these experiments, let's make sure that we're not harming the animals in any way we don't have to. Mm-hmm. And so while a lot of people in SILA might personally have more of an animal rights philosophy, we're very much an animal welfare group. And that's a combination of, as Uli said, it's more practical, it's easier to get things done. And also, you know, people have some pretty scary misconceptions about animal rights. You know, there was a time when we were trying to do a dog enrichment lab where there was some dogs being experimented on campus, which, you know, most people wouldn't think that the University of Illinois is experimenting on dogs and cats, and we are. And all we were asking basically is for the dogs to have some more exercise time, some toys, some bedding in their cages. And as a result of that, you know, there was a memo going around the university saying, be on alert for terrorist activity. And this is the kind of thing that when people think animal rights, they get really nervous. And so partly it's just that there aren't any people in our group like that. Mm-hmm. We don't do that kind of action. And so we partly are just trying to put people at rest that, look, we're not here to fight. We're not here to throw bricks through windows. You know, we're just here to try to make a positive change in a peaceful fashion.
That's wonderful. Now, in terms of animal cruelty with animal testing, what types of things has the organization done to address that issue?
Well, actually, just now we're doing seminars on cosmetic testing, which is something that still goes on today in a lot of companies. And also we talk about animal ingredients in some cosmetics. And so we're going around to different dorms on campus and presenting the information and giving out free samples that were generously donated by cruelty-free companies, and just kind of letting people know what are different cosmetic animal tests that go on and what are alternatives and, you know, just different options that they have.
Now, these cruelty-free companies, do they still use animals? They just aren't cruel to them? Or do they just completely not use animals at all in their testing of their product?
Well, some of them don't do any animal cosmetic testing. They don't test. Some of them, they don't do any tests themselves, and their suppliers don't do any tests for the ingredients. Like, they don't, you know, put the different chemicals into the eyes of rabbits, or they don't, you know, shave the skin and then apply it to the skin and see what happens. Those are some of the tests that some cosmetic companies do. And then also, if you want to go even further, some don't use any animal products in their cosmetics, because some animal products have, you know, fat from animals that have been euthanized at shelters, or from farm animals, the leftovers are rendered and put into cosmetics. So those types of things are also eliminated.
Now, there's so much information in this area and in this field. Where do you all get a lot of your information? I mean, the things that you know, the things that you have learned. A lot of this information are things that the general public has no idea about. How do you all learn about these things?
I'd say for the most part, you can always search the internet if you need more information. Compassion Over Killing has a great website. Even parts of the PETA website has some good links. They have a good link to the cruelty-free cosmetics information.
Protecting Animals USA, the organization that was created by Students Improving the Lives of Animals founder, they also have a lot of information on factory farming on their website, too.
And for some things, we also, depending on the issue, like, for example, if people have questions about health or something, we try as much as possible to get books or journal articles, too, just things that are, you know, a little more rigorous than saying, well, we got stuff off the internet or we found it in a pamphlet. Because one of the questions we do get a lot is, well, where'd you hear that from?
Mm-hmm.
With the implication that we're making it up. So depending on the issue, you know, it's tough to get the original sources on some issues. But even actually some of the pamphlets like Why Vegan, which is a common pamphlet we give out, you can get them at whyvegan.org. They now have a citation for at least most of their facts.
Okay, we'll get back to the vegan issue. I just want to reintroduce our guests. We have John Fisher, Kathleen King, Uli Nishan, all individuals who are involved with the Students Improving the Lives of Animal organization. They're with us today on our Keeping the Faith radio show. Students Improving the Lives of Animals is a program of the University YMCA. I'd like to encourage people to call in and ask questions or make comments about the issues that we're discussing today. If you're outside of Champaign-Urbana, you can call in at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, you can call 333-9455. Again, that's 333-9455. And just a reminder that the WILL is continuing a campaign to raise funds. Only the contributions from our members, the Friends of WILL, have made it possible for WILL to maintain the quality and variety a program service as tax-based funding for them has declined drastically. We are live and local in an area when there are fewer and fewer locally owned radio stations and diminishing live broadcastings. The number to call in to make a contribution is 217-244-9455. $40 will give you a basic membership, but any amount is welcome, and please feel free to call in at 244-9455 to make a contribution to WILL. Getting back to the issue that that just arose about why vegan, could you explain what veganism is as opposed to vegetarianism, and why several animal welfare activists choose this form of a lifestyle?
Well, veganism is somewhat a step beyond vegetarianism, whereas vegetarianism, oftentimes someone will eat items that include dairy or that include eggs. And when it comes to veganism, you completely eliminate the eggs and the dairy out of your eating habits, and you also eliminate all animal byproducts and products out of your, say, shampoo, out of any of your body products, your clothing, and so forth.
And vegetarianism is just primarily...
Well, vegetarianism, typically a vegetarian will still eat eggs or dairy, and sometimes they might wear leather, might not. Sometimes vegetarianism is just a diet. Veganism is, to some extent, more of a way of life.
And there's various terms like ovo-lacto-vegetarian for someone that eats eggs and dairy. Is there lacto-vegetarian for someone that doesn't eat eggs for whatever reason but does eat dairy? So there's the whole range of terms like that.
You mentioned the dissection campaign as one of the issues that you dealt with. People living in the community may be seeing an animal cruelty commercial that's been playing on several stations locally. Could you kind of talk about the basis of that, how that came together, and how that's being funded and distributed?
Well, as you mentioned before, a lot of people in the public don't know about what goes on in, you know, when animals are raised for food. And so the commercial that's being played locally is basically a way to try to let people see, you know, how animals are raised that are used for food and what kind of treatment they receive. And so basically the funding for that has just been through donations and, you know, raising money in different ways to get the funds to be able to let people kind of have that insight.
And the organization who put the video together?
It's Protecting Animals USA. I believe it's www.protectinganimals.org.
Okay, and that was the organization founded by the founder of Students Sella. Improving the Lives of Animals.
Yeah.
What is some information regarding animal cruelty that the audience might not know?
Well, I guess there's sort of a variety of things, and there's so many issues. We don't want anyone to feel overwhelmed. I mean, I guess one of the biggest things is that, you know, the more you look into this issue, the more it can feel, you know, scary. There's so much. But so, for example, one issue that people come up to us a lot and say, "Well, why are you vegan? Don't you understand that they don't kill the animals?" You know. So I guess one issue is with chickens, that whether they're broiler chickens or chickens for eggs, that as a standard practice, for example, not to get too graphic, but they cut their beaks off because they're so cramped that they'll peck at each other. There's a lot of other practices like that, just sort of things that are standard practice in the industry where you're sort of treating the animal as a machine in order to get maximum efficiency. and that even in some of the farms that people might not think of as being, you know, super cruel, there can still be a lot of things that are just run-of-the-mill, like, you know, cows and pigs having their tails cut off because they'll chew in each other's tails, again, because of cramping. So there's a sort of a lot of little issues like that that people often aren't aware of.
In this day and age, there's so much mass farming and production, and you know, we live in a community where there's a lot of agriculture. Do you find that most of the farmers, most of the individuals who raise livestock, who raise poultry, are using these practices? And is it a movement, a slow movement, or toward individuals who have the smaller farm? I mean, what would be the ideal situation? I mean, for people who do still want to consume those types of foods, where should they get their food?
Well, I think, I mean, if the question is, do most people raise their meat like that? In terms of individuals who are growing the meat, probably the answer is no. There are probably still more small factory farmers, or I'm sorry, small farmers and factory farmers. But if the issue is number of animals, you know, there are a lot of small farms, but they produce very limited output. The factory farms, while there aren't as many of them, you know, you can have just tens of thousands of animals on a single farm. And so the problem is that a lot of small farmers, you know, they're not in favor of factory farms either, whether it be because they don't agree with the practices on a moral level, or whether just because they're being squeezed out as a business. You know, mm-hmm. they can't compete having cows graze in open land when there's people who, you know, have feedlots and hormones and all these things that are going on. So there are some issues with, you know, free range is still sort of a label that doesn't have a lot of strict meaning yet, or it does have a meaning, but it's not what people think. Like, it doesn't actually necessarily mean that animals can roam around. But there are people that do have, you know, true free-range animals. So I guess if you're going to eat the products, the best bet is to buy locally, you know, at the farmer's market and things. And you can talk to the people. You can find out, well, how do you raise your animals? And any time when you can look someone in the eye that's doing it, you have a better chance that, you know, they're going to be honest with you and are raising them as humanely as they can.
Locally, where are some places that you know where people can buy either vegan options or poultry or any kind of farm animal that has been raised humanely?
I think one of the best places to go shopping for vegetarian items would be the co-op, which is in the IDF building on Wright and Springfield. But otherwise, if you want, Strawberry Field sells free-range meat, I believe, and
Natural Gourmet in Champaign sells a lot of these kinds of foods. The farmer's market does have a couple local. I mean, we're not the best people to ask about where to get humane meat because we're all vegetarians here. So, you know, we're maybe not the experts on that particular topic. But
yeah, trying your natural food store would probably be your best bet.
And also for people who are vegetarian or vegan, another great resource is online through Campus Vegetarian Society's website. You can find out what local restaurants have vegetarian and vegan options, what they are. So you can kind of see before, you know, maybe if you want to try a new thing, you could read about it online. Or if you're going out with friends and you want to make sure that you have something you could eat, you could check before you go.
And the website is just vegchampaign.com, so mm-hmm. VEG Champaign, and that'll get you to the restaurant guide. And it has basically a listing for each restaurant that participated. We would go in and interview them, and we have a full menu of everything you can get, vegetarian or vegan, and a description of it or whatever. So even if, you know, if you're a parent or something, you've got a couple of your kids,
sure.
and, you know, they're into that kind of lifestyle, and you don't know where to take them, you know, that's a good way to scout it out a bit.
Vegchampaign.org. So that's,
.com.
Oh, .com. VEGCHAMPAING. n.org or .com. I'll get that eventually. I guess another question that I have is I want to go into kind of talking about your personal stories and how you became involved in this, you know, being on a college campus and working with college students. It's kind of, this isn't the most common way to live, and this isn't the most common lifestyle to lead, and there's so many other avenues and things to do. So maybe, John, you personally, how did this come about for you? How did you start to pursue this type of a lifestyle?
Well, I guess I went vegetarian now about almost 12 years ago, and the very first thing that started off was just, you know, sort of cooking with meat. It always kind of grossed me out, just sort of on a subconscious level. I didn't really think about why, but And, you know, I even remember my mom making a comment of, well, if you're grossed out by even touching it, you shouldn't be cooking with it. Sort of like, oh, you know, that's
exactly
not what she was thinking to encourage that. But so I started looking into it a little more, and I think the catalyst for me was finding out how intelligent pigs were, that in a lot of ways, you know, a pig is functionally equivalent to a two-year-old in some of the mental tests they can perform. And that just freaked me out, that we're eating something that's smarter than some of the people that, you know, that exist and are fully protected by rights. Not that those people shouldn't be protected, but just that, you know, these are animals that can think.
Sure.
So that kind of got me started. It took me about a year to sort of slowly go vegetarian. And then several years later, started thinking more about veganism when I met a friend who was vegan, just realizing that, you know, the environmental aspects and that a lot of the animal issues were the same. And then I guess on campus, when I first came here as a freshman, there was no vegetarian or animal group on campus. So another friend of mine, Bernie Sanders, was interested in starting one. So him and I and a couple other people started the Campus Vegetarian Society. I think that was in spring of 98. And that's really where I started off getting involved. And then when Sila came along, I got involved with that as well. But
okay. Danielle, before we move to you, Danielle is the founder of Sila. Kathleen, before we move to you, I'm going to make a few more comments. Just a reminder that you're listening to Keeping the Faith on AM 580 WILL. This program is supported in part by the University YMCA. The University YMCA is the oldest continuous student organization at the University of Illinois and has several student organizations that are part of it. Since 1873, the University YMCA has been developing student leaders by providing opportunities for community service and social action. We have several student organizations, some of which are Alternative Spring Break, Students Improving the Lives of Animals, Amnesty International, Campus Vegetarian Society, Philippine Student Association, and Vis-a-Vis, a local tutoring program, among others. This week at the University YMCA, we will be having our annual auction dinner. Some of the items up for grabs at the auction dinner are Cubs tickets, several trips and getaways that will be auctioned off, and several other gift certificates, gift baskets, items from local vendors, as well as getaways for all over the state and even beyond. If you'd like to join us at our annual auction dinner, please call Amy Kandrak, who is the University YMCA Director of Development. She can be reached at 337-1500 or 337-1633, and she can be reached to reserve your place at the auction dinner. It will be held at the Hawthorne Suites this Friday, and tickets do need to be reserved in advance, but we are still looking for individuals who would like to join us. We are also still looking for teachers for Communiversity classes. Communiversity is local classes that are taught. We have classes ranging from dance to yoga to massage classes to language classes and several other fitness as well as educational classes. If you are interested in teaching a Communiversity class, please call Cherise Johnson, who is the Communiversity coordinator. She can be reached at the University YMCA if you have a proposal for a class. And no proposal is too outrageous. We encourage all different types of classes. She can be reached at 337-1514. Again, this is Becca Nieto. I'm the Y Program Director, and I'm guest hosting today for Steve Shoemaker, who is a regular host. Also a reminder that the WILL is doing a fundraising drive, and a reminder that the future of WILL is in your hands. Only the contributions from WILL friends have made it possible for WILL to maintain the quality and variety of program service, as tax-based funding has declined drastically. Now, almost half of the operating budget must be raised every year. If you've made a financial contribution in the past, know that your support is still needed, and you can make a contribution by calling 217-244-9455. $40 will get you basic membership, but a donation of any amount is very welcome. If you'd like to call in and ask questions or make comments about our topic today, which is the Students Improving the Lives of Animal Group, which is a program of the University YMCA, you can call in if you're outside of Champaign-Urbana by calling 1-800-222-WILL. That's 1-800-222-9455. Or if you are in Champaign-Urbana, you can call 333-9455. Again, that's 333-9455. Again, we're with our guests, John Fisher, Kathleen King, Uli Nishan, all who are members of Students Improving the Lives of Animals. Getting back to what we were discussing earlier and your personal stories, Kathleen, if you would like to talk about your stories and what you and kind of how you became involved.
Well, I guess it all kind of started when...
Oh, excuse me. I'm just going to interrupt you for just a second. We have a caller. caller?
Yes. I wanted to make a comment and also ask a question. The comment I wanted to make, I'm not a vegetarian myself, but I think it's a great, great effort, and I really commend these people. My question is... how many vegetarians are there in the world? I'm a nurse, and so I wonder if you can have a balanced diet and be a vegetarian. And that is my question. I hang up and listen to your answer.
Thank you.
I'm not actually aware of any world statistics. That's a very good question. In the U.S., the most recent study I saw, I think it was 2 million vegetarians. And it also depends. That's people... you know, that are strict vegetarians. A lot of people more and more are identifying with a vegetarian lifestyle as sort of a partial thing. They're sometimes called semi-tarians, people that are recognizing some of the health benefits. And to answer, that second part of your question, the health benefits, that's a really great question. If you look at organizations like, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, the Anti-Cancer Society, you know, a lot of these major groups, a lot of them are coming to recommend vegetarian lifestyles because of the variety of the benefits, such as, you know, reducing heart disease, drastically reducing your risk of cancer. You know, it cuts your risk of cancer by, for example, colon cancer and breast cancer by a factor of about 4. And as far as balancing nutrients, it's really not as difficult as you'd think. You know, people always worry, well, how do you get enough protein? And protein deficiency is almost completely unknown among vegetarians, except in, you know, third world countries where it's a matter of they're not eating a variety of foods. But it's very easy to get enough protein. And these days, there's so many foods available for vegetarians that it's really not difficult at all. If you want any more information, I just, you know, just type in vegetarian nutrition into Google, and you'll probably get quite a lot of sites. Or if you want something a little more rigorous, there's a website called PCRM.org, which stands for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're a group of physicians who are advocating vegetarian lifestyle primarily for its nutritional benefits.
You mentioned... I think people's biggest concerns when they think about vegetarianism is the lack of protein in terms of staying healthy and getting the amount that you need. What is the primary source of protein as a protein supplement or a protein filler for individuals who don't eat meat?
I think for the most part, there are a lot of soy products out there, but as John said, you do need to diversify. So there are other... things like the wheat gluten or seitan and
nuts, beans, seeds.
Definitely, yeah.
And actually, almost all plant foods contain protein. Well, you don't think of, for example, you don't think of broccoli as exactly a powerhouse of protein, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually, you know, get out something like The Joy of Cooking that has lists of, you know, caloric content and calcium, all these things, you know, if a cup of broccoli has 5 grams of protein, which is admittedly small, but it's only, you know, 100 calories, as long as you're eating enough calories in the day, which is, you know, 2,000 for most people, you're getting plenty of protein. You could eat nothing but you know, vegetables, potatoes, broccoli, carrots, and still, as long as you're eating enough to be full, still end up with enough protein, which is pretty remarkable, you know.
It's interesting. Going back to the different ways that you all became involved, Kathleen, how did you get involved? Kind of what's your story, and when did you start considering yourself an animal welfare activist and living this lifestyle?
Well, I guess when I was growing up, we always had companion animals in the house. So I was around animals a lot. And from a very early age, I learned that at least, you know, considering dogs and cats and rabbits and all those household, you know, people that are animals that are kept oftentimes as pets, I learned that they, you know, could feel and had emotions and had personality. And then when I was in elementary school, even though I grew up in the suburbs, but we had a community farm, and I used to go to it when I was little, and It certainly wasn't a farm, you know, like a factory. It certainly wasn't a profit farm that was kept to make lots of crops and raise lots of animals, but they had a small amount of chickens, and so I had exposure to that. And then I guess through there, I kind of, you know, slowly made the realization that the chicken that I liked at the farm that I would, you know, hold and sit around with was no different than the chicken that was killed for my dinner. And so exactly. I guess that was kind of led to the realization. And then I was vegetarian for a while, and slowly when I got to college started realizing that the practices oftentimes for egg-laying hens and for dairy cows is just as horrible, in my opinion, if not worse, than the practices used for raising cows for beef.
Hmm. We have a question or a caller. Caller?
Yeah, not a question, a comment. I'm responding to the last caller's question about protein.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I haven't heard you mention, or the guest mention, is balanced protein,
mm-hmm.
which is a combination of legumes and grains, because they have the legumes and the grains have differing amounts of the amino acids,
mm-hmm.
and they potentiate each other because you only get as much protein, as my understanding of whichever one has the least amount. And when you put them together, you get a complete protein. So that's why a lot of cultures have dishes like beans and rice.
Mm-hmm.
We have peanut butter and bread, and succotash, which is lima beans and corn. But that's soy, I understand, is almost complete, but I'm not sure it's complete. But
soy,
if you
soy
combine
is
it with the grain, then it is complete.
Okay.
And any of the legumes with any of the grains pretty much does it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And as long as you eat those within a 24-hour period, you know, the different amino acids, they can combine. It's not something where you have to have it necessarily at one meal. You don't have to have peanut butter and wheat or corn and, you know, corn and squash or rice and beans. But as long as you eat these sort of over the course of the day, your body does the sorting and then we'll make the complete proteins.
I'd like to reintroduce our guests for today. We have John Fisher, Kathleen King, and Uli Nishan, all who are involved with Students Improving the Lives of Animals on campus. Students Improving the Lives of Animals is a program of the University YMCA. If you would like to call in to ask questions or make comments about our topic today, if you're outside of Champaign-Urbana, you can call 1-800-222-9455. And if you are within Champaign-Urbana, you can call 333-945. Again, that's outside of Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-222-9455, and within Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also a reminder that WILL is doing a fundraising campaign. Only the contributions from the Friends of WILL have made it possible for this for WILL to maintain the quality and variety of program service, as tax-based funding has declined drastically. WILL must now raise almost half of their operating budget every year. If you have made a financial contribution in the past, we do want to remind you that your support is still needed. If you'd like to make a contribution, you can call in at 217-244-9455. Again, that's 217-244-9455. Basic membership is $40, but a donation of any amount is very welcome. Going back to stories and how you all became involved and started to become animal welfare activists as well as leading this lifestyle, Uli, what's your story? How did things begin for you?
When I was about 14 years old, I was watching a show on TV. It was maybe Dateline or one of those shows, and they did a story on E. coli bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was just the graphic images of the carcasses hanging there, the butcher shops. They visited different places and talked about how E. coli bacteria spreads. And I just started to put two and two together, and I decided that I just didn't want to eat meat anymore. And
mm-hmm.
As I got older, I was pretty naive to the issues of the egg and dairy industry. And I had to do a speech once on, and I decided to do it on vegetarianism. So I started researching it and realized that, I mean, it's just as bad, and the suffering that goes on there is you know, equal to that of meat producing animals. So I decided to become a vegan, and I guess how I became involved with silos. Last winter, I went to Washington D.C. and visited Poplar Springs Animal Sanctuary. And getting to see animals in an environment where they're pretty free to roam around and they aren't being used for someone else's gain made me realize that, you know, every animal has a personality and every animal has an identity in a way. And I definitely, you know, want to support people moving towards animal welfare and animal rights.
What are your views on companion animals? Kathleen, you had mentioned that you grew up with companion animals. I know there are some people who get confused and think that's another thing that all animal welfare activists think that's they don't support that at all. So personally for you all, what are your views on that?
Well, I personally think that, I mean, if you adopt a dog from a humane society, you know, a shelter, I think that's a positive thing, because otherwise that you know, animal might not have the chance at a life, so they might be put to sleep. And however, I don't think that it's positive buying animals from pet shops, because oftentimes there's mistreatments with the breeding of those animals. And so, but I would encourage people, if they, you know, do want a companion animal, if they have the time and everything to take care of one, to get one from the local shelter or humane society.
Yeah, and I actually worked at a pet store for several years, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on both in the pet food industry and the breeding industry that people just would have no idea, you know. Animals being shipped illegally young. A big problem in the 80s was there was actually a whole class of people who were capturing animals that were left unattended in backyards and selling them back to pet food dealers for grade B meat. To get a grade B meat license, you need basically almost nothing. There's really no certification. So to some degree, that still goes on. But so one of the issues is just even the food industry, that, you know, you have meat that's been thrown out in the supermarket ended up being in pet food, or cancerous meat. Like I said, dogs or cats that have been euthanized sometimes, depending on the method of euthanasia. A lot of scary stuff ends up in the food. So that's the pet industry is something that's kind of nasty.
Oh, wow. We have a caller.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a vegetarian, but I guess I knew a guy down the street who used to hand out these brochures that you guys have on the corner. And he used to, like, criticize people for not being vegetarian and stuff. But what I never understood is, like, well, I mean, it seems like, you know, a lot of animals also suffer and die when vegetarians eat soybeans, because, like, well, soybeans need a lot of land to grow. So like, I just don't understand why being a vegetarian is better for the environment and for animals and stuff than, like, I don't know, someone like Ted Nugent. Yeah, right, who, like, hunts a lot, sure, but he has thousands and thousands of acres of protected land with animals and wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, don't animals he kills and the animals his vegetarians sort of kill for soybeans, don't they just about even out?
Well, I guess there's a couple issues. I mean, the first question is just about, you said soybeans require a lot of land. It's true. Obviously, it requires land to grow food, but it takes about, I mean, roughly, it depends animal to animal, but about 10 times as much land to grow the food that we then give back to our animals. It's not like, I mean, you're right, hunting is sort of different. If you have animals that are roaming free and you kill them, that's sort of a very different environmental picture. We don't get our food from people going out hunting. We get our food from people who grow grain or soybeans or corn or whatever else, feed it back to the animals. And just, you know, the food chain, that's inefficient, so then you're only getting back a small portion of that food. So I think that's the biggest issue, is just that no matter how much animals are displaced by regular agriculture, it requires quite a bit more agriculture to support animal industry.
That brings up an interesting issue, which is livestock grazing. I know several of you are also very concerned about the environment. What kinds of effects does livestock grazing have on the environment, and what types of information do you have about that?
Another thing is sometimes rainforest land is cut down for either livestock grazing or also for to grow, as John mentioned, it takes much more land to grow soybeans or whatever you're going to feed to the animals than if you actually just ate it directly. So it's very inefficient. So, I mean, overall, it causes more land. And also from the high levels of fertilizers and pesticides that runs off into, you know, nearby streams and causes pollution. And those are some of the effects.
And there's also issues like, for example, out west where because grazing is such an important part of a lot of people's lifestyle, the USDA has a lot of pressure to hunt wolves, for example, or other predators more intensely than they otherwise would have to. So because people have this stake in grazing on public lands,
mm-hmm.
A lot of predators that, you know, ecologically would be beneficial to have around are getting destroyed.
And also just the amount of waste that's produced from raising the animals. I mean, I know for people who live near the U of I campus, if you're near the South Farms, a lot of times, especially on windy days, yeah, you can smell, you know, the effects of farming on large scales. And a lot of times they simply don't have, you know, enough land to spread that over, so they'll overapply it and it will run off. And also a lot of times it creates need for more pesticides because the manure causes more insects to come. And, I mean, all that leads to higher levels of pollution.
Have you done any work with the campus in terms of that, the issues that take place out there?
Well, there was some, you know, when the South Farms was being remodeled recently, there was some talk that maybe we could, you know, get a say in as far as some of the facilities that were being redone and stuff like that. But it turned out that, you know, again, partly because of the perception that, you know, if you're into animal welfare, you must be a terrorist. I think they just weren't really interested in getting us on board. But yeah, it is definitely a local issue. I mean, especially communities that get their water from surface water, you know, the nitrate runoff from animals is really an issue. It can cause blue baby syndrome is one of the more common things where, you know, the nitrate binds to the hemoglobin and they don't get enough oxygen. So there's certainly on a local level there are effects.
Mm-hmm. Just a reminder that WILL is doing a fundraising campaign. The future of the station is in your hands, and only the contributions from friends of WILL have made it possible to maintain the quality and variety of program service as tax-based funding has declined drastically. If you would like to make a donation, you feel free to call in at 217-244-9455. $40 will get you a basic membership, but a donation of any amount is welcome. We have another caller. Caller?
Yes. I understand you to be interested in all animals. Is that right? Welfare of all animals or just food stuff?
Well, certainly an animal with a nervous system. You know, at a certain point, it's hard to campaign too hard for a sponge.
Right.
But, yeah.
So one of the biggest issues around here, at least on campus, would be the use of animals for research. So where do you guys come down on that?
I think it probably depends more on who you talk to in the group. I mean, certainly we have a very diverse student group, and people feel different ways about animal research, but I think as a group it would be safe to say that we hope to maximize the comfort and the protection of the animals so that, you know, if experiments are being done, they cause the least harm possible to the animals, and also that any alternatives are fully investigated that would not involve animals.
What types of conferences and national events have you all attended or are there for animal welfare activists?
Just a couple weeks ago, Farm Sanctuary held the Farm Animal Forum in Chicago, and they had several speakers come and discuss the issues of the farm animal business.
And also in the fall, some of the members attended a conference for conscious living that was also in Chicago.
And there's a whole bunch. It's hard to remember them all. You know, every year it seems like there's a few that pop up.
What are your own personal favorite, if each of you could kind of go through and share your most memorable moment being involved with this organization, Students Improving the Lives of Animals, thus far?
I'd have to say one of my most memorable moments was last summer when we were protesting the circus in Urbana. It was just kind of interesting to see how many people that just being there and giving people, you know, true information and how many people turned around. It really made me feel good about being part of the cause.
I guess it's hard for me to say just because I feel like I have so many memories and I really cherish them all. But I guess one of my favorite things is just the meetings and being able to talk with everyone and come up with new ideas and kind of, you know, share what's going on and I guess just planning, you know.
And for me, it would probably be the when we've been doing this dissection campaign for a year, and all of a sudden it came to the final Senate vote, which had been delayed several times, and the University of Illinois Senate, I should clarify that. But when it finally passed, it was just such an amazing feeling because, you know, there had been so many – every step of the way, there was personal attacks, people calling into question our sources or our motives. And when it finally actually became a part of university policy that this was a valid issue, that was very real.
What was that process of getting that moved along?
Well, whenever you want to change, it depends. The university bureaucracy is something I certainly don't claim to understand. You know, there's the policies and codes, but most things would go through the Student Faculty Senate, which is you know, a body comprised primarily of faculty. I think there's 50 students and 200 faculty. And so you sort of have to bring your issue to a committee, in our case, the Educational Policy Committee. They debate it. You know, you make your presentation, give them sources. Over the course of months, they sort of come up with what they feel is an appropriate policy. That then gets sent to the main Senate, you know, gets debated there. Maybe, you know, there's testing vote. All these things just take – it's remarkable how much back and forth there is.
What would you suggest for individuals who want to get involved, locally in animal welfare activism?
I'd say for the most part, flyering information about vegetarian or vegan eating is a good way to get people interested in the cause because, for the most part, I think the consumption of animals is the biggest harm, and as far as the numbers go.
Or just, you know, come to a meeting. We have our meetings, like you said, Thursday at the YMCA, or tomorrow, Monday at 7 p.m., there's a Campus Vegetarian Society potluck. And one of the things that, you know, I definitely want to stress is that both groups are very much non-confrontational. You know, a caller mentioned someone that was, you know, very angry about people not being vegetarian. We don't try to do that. We try to give people information, let them come to their own conclusions. We all feel strongly. But we're always happy to talk to anyone. So whether you eat meat or, you know, whether you believe in certain activities are just fine, we still welcome that.
Mm-hmm. Just a reminder, Campus Vegetarian Society's potluck is at 7 p.m. tomorrow at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church on the corner of Wright and Chalmers. And Students Improving the Lives of Animals meets at 6 p.m. on Thursdays at the University YMCA, which is also at the corner of Wright and Chalmers. I'd like to thank you all for coming. I know that you're very busy, and I appreciate you giving your time. Working with you is certainly a pleasure at the University YMCA, and I admire you greatly for your continued efforts. Just a reminder to callers that WILL is doing a fundraising campaign. The future of WILL is in your hands. Only the contributions from Friends of WILL have made it possible for the station to maintain the quality and variety of program service. This is because tax-based funding has declined drastically. Now almost half of the operating budget must be raised every year. If you have made a financial contribution in the past, just a reminder that your support is still needed. And to make a donation, you can call in at 217-244-9455. Again, that's 217-244-9455. $40 will get you a basic membership, but a donation of any amount is more than welcome. Again, thanking our guests today, John Fisher, Kathleen King, and Uli Nishan, all involved in Students Improving the Lives of Animals, as well as other student organizations at the University YMCA. And a reminder that there are still tickets available for the University's YMCA annual auction dinner. We have Cubs tickets, trips, getaways, all types of items that will be donated in the auction. If you'd like to attend, please call the University YMCA and ask for Amy Kandrak. The number is 337-1500. Next week, April 25th, on Keeping the Faith, our host Steve Shoemaker will be back, and his guest will be Rabbi Dovid Techtel, who will be talking on Jewish meditation and Chabad. I'd like to thank you again for listening to Keeping the Faith today. Again, I'm Rebecca Nieto, your host.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Illini Studio, Champaign; Illinois Graphics Incorporated, Bloomington; Lincoln Diagnostics Incorporated, Decatur, and the High School of St. Thomas More, Champaign. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
You're listening to WILL Urbana. We're a listener-supported service of the University of Illinois. It's a minute before 6 o'clock. Good evening. I'm Jay Pierce, the program director and interim station manager of the station. And we'd like to hear from you at 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support to this station. You can also make a pledge online at wyll.uiuc.edu. This American Life is coming up in just a moment. We'll have some very special incentive for you to call in and make your financial commitment to this station during the next hour. So stand by for that. The forecast for Champaign-Urbana for tonight: becoming mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. It'll be windy with a low around 62 degrees. Winds from the southwest at 20 to 30 with a few gusts of 40 miles an hour. And tomorrow, partly sunny and breezy with a high around 75 degrees. Still a chance of some rain early in the day, clearing to partly cloudy toward afternoon. This American Life is a program that comes